By a show of hands really quickly, how many of you are familiar with the name Alfred Nobel? Okay, for those of you that aren't, I'll give you a real quick education. Alfred Nobel is largely known today for his work with the Nobel Peace Prize, which is awarded to those that have a positive impact on humanity. But when you study the life and history of Alfred Nobel, he actually has a pretty interesting story. He was a very wealthy man when he died, largely due to his several inventions, and he also owned, I think it was estimated, close to 100 factories. And it's been estimated that his wealth by today's standards when he died would have been close to $265 million. Nobel had no wife, no children, and he left the largest portion of his wealth to things like the Nobel Peace Prize to keep those going throughout history. The Nobel Peace Prize wasn't the other. There was four other awards that he was responsible for. But it's been said that Nobel's motivation to recognize and impact the world for peace came through a rather unusual experience that he had. He had a brother that died in 1888, but due to poor journalism, it was reported that it was actually Alfred Nobel that died, and they wrote an obituary that was published in at least one French newspaper. And it's believed that Alfred had the opportunity to read his own obituary, and it was not a pleasant one. Whoever wrote the obituary called him the merchant of death and implied that he became wealthy by developing ways to mutilate and kill people. Now, these statements were made because Alfred Nobel is the man who invented dynamite, and several of the factories that he owned were munitions factories. Now, I want you to understand there is no definitive proof that Nobel reading his own obituary changed his mind, but I do think that it seems rather odd that a man that devoted his life to developing and manufacturing explosives wanted to recognize those who promoted peace. I think that's interesting. And here's what my kind of thought is. Words are very powerful. And reading those words or hearing those words can impact people in either positive or negative ways. I think it's possible that Alfred Nobel was challenged by reading how people viewed him in his obituary as a merchant of death or somebody who made his wealth by mutilating and killing people. And I believe it's possible that after reading that, he reevaluated his own life. But here is what I know for sure. Words, our speech is a powerful thing. Proverbs chapter 18, verse 21 says this, "The tongue has the power of death and life, and those who love it will eat its fruit." And doesn't that sound a lot different than sticks and stones may break your bones, but words will never hurt you? So today we're going to dive into the power of our words and speech. This is a continuation of our series through Proverbs. So you know now we're in the second part of the book of Proverbs, where this is where the actual Proverbs appear. Proverbs are just really short, succinct sayings that pack a powerful punch, I guess. And today, the Proverbs that we're going to look at deal with speech. And again, just like with all of the other concepts that we've looked at up to this point, the Proverbs teach us that there's a wise way and a foolish way to use words. Just like there's a wise path to follow in life and a foolish path, we see this contrast with our speech. There's a wise way to speak, there's a foolish way to speak. And the Proverbs also contrast a difference between righteous speech or the way a righteous person speaks and the way a wicked person speaks. But here's kind of the big point that I want you to write down early because I think everything that we talk about from this point on kind of really hinges on this point. And this is one of those things I think it's easy to remember when you walk out the doors. You can take it with you. You can recite it to yourself throughout life when you're confronted with how to use your words. So here it is. Here's the big point. Foolish words are destructive. Wise words are constructive. Foolish words are destructive. Wise words are constructive. So I did put out a YouVersion event. I would encourage you, if you have that on your phone, that Bible app, the YouVersion app, you're going to want to, throughout the rest of this series, you're going to want to follow that. Follow Hannah's Creek. Find the event, because the nature of these sermons now are topical. It's almost impossible, I think, to go through Proverbs and preach expositorily, because it'd be like, you know, here, there, everywhere. So I'm trying to put topics together, and because we're putting topics together, the verses are kind of like that everywhere. So I've tried to put all of the verses that I'm going to use on that outline on the YouVersion event. And if you're a person that likes to read the verses I'm going through, that'll be the easiest way for you to do it. Otherwise, you're going to be flipping pages, which is fine if you want to do that. I'll try to listen, and when I hear them stop, then I'll move on. Foolish words are destructive. Wise words are constructive. Here's what Proverbs chapter 11, verse 9 says. With their mouths, the godless destroy their neighbors, but through knowledge, the righteous escape. If you skip a couple verses to verse 11, you'll find, through the blessing of the upright, a city is exalted, but the mouth of the wicked, by the mouth of the wicked, it is destroyed. So let's get the tough stuff out of the way first. Let's look at what Proverbs kind of highlights as destructive forms of speech. Now, for some of you, this is going to be review. You know, for some of you that have grown up in the church, you've heard these things talked about over and over and over. And so review is okay. Some of you, it may be completely new, and that's okay too. But today I'm going to talk about three pretty distinct ways that speech can be destructive. And the first one that I want to talk about, we're going to stay right in chapter 11. I tried to keep the chapters as close as possible. The first destructive form of speech I want to talk about is gossip or slander. In Proverbs, I'll be the first to admit, like, it is very hard to do an exhaustive word study in the book of Proverbs because there's so many. But what I came across when I did a word study as it related to gossip or slander is there's three different Hebrew words that I picked up on really quickly that we translate as gossip in English. The first Hebrew word is rakil. You don't need to remember that. But what it means is slanderer, tellbearer, or whisperer. So in Proverbs chapter 11, verse 13, this is what you'll find. A gossip betrays a confidence, but a trustworthy person keeps a secret. So you kind of get that. That's the word there, that a gossip or a talebearer, a slanderer, a whisperer betrays a confidence, but a trustworthy person keeps a secret. Another word that's used, it originates from a root word that means to roll to pieces. So you're rolling something so many times that it just falls apart. And so the literal definition that's given of the second word is to murmur or whisper. So you kind of just, another way we translate this is to backbite. This comes from Proverbs chapter 16, verse 28, that says, a perverse person stirs up conflict, and a gossip separates close friends. So a murmurer, a whisperer, a backbiter separates close friends. The third word carries the definition, again, of whispering or defamation or an evil report. I found this in chapter 10, verse 18. Whoever conceals hatred with lying lips and spreads slander is a fool. Now, interestingly, when I did a study on this word here, debah, this is the same word that's used to describe what 10 of the 12 spies did in Numbers chapter 13. So if you remember Numbers chapter 13, Moses is gathering 12 spies. He's going to send them out into the promised land to see what it's all about before they go in and take it over. And the story is that they go out and they see all these great things, but 10 of the 12 come back and they spread a report that it's impossible. The people are too big. We can't do it. And the word used there is this word, slander. So they spread a report that caused fear and panic and distracted people from God's purpose. Now, here's really what I want you to understand about gossip. You know, the three words I don't think are so important as what these three words indicate. Because I think what they tell us is that there's three ways that gossip is so destructive. This is why gossip is one of those things that Scripture kind of talks about over and over and over again. And the thing we see from that first word is that one of the reasons gossip is so destructive is it destroys trust. It destroys trust. So, a gossip betrays a confidence. That's what it means. The trust that there is in a relationship, when gossip takes place, that trust is gone. The second way that gossip is so destructive is that it devastates relationships. You know, so if you're a note taker, and some of you, I've seen some of you take notes in these Bibles like it's a work of art. I'll give you a heads up. There's three D's here, so work that into your artistic design. Three D's. Destroys trust, devastates relationships. A perverse person stirs up conflict, and a gossip separates close friends. The relationships are devastated. And then this third word, when we couple it with its use in Numbers 13, the third way that gossip is so destructive is that it distracts people from God's purpose. It distracts people from God's purpose. So that's kind of that first form of speech, gossip, slander. That's a destructive form of speech. And what Solomon is telling us in these Proverbs is that the foolish person speaks words of gossip. Actually, what he says is, he says the foolish person is a gossip. And so he characterizes that person by their speech. The second form of destructive speech is lying. Proverbs chapter 12, verses 19 and then verse 22 says this: truthful lips endure forever, but a lying tongue lasts only a moment. The Lord detests lying lips, but he delights in people who are trustworthy. And the word that's used here for lie, it's related to giving false testimony or deception. And here's the scary thing about lying for me. As I was studying for this sermon this week and kind of reflecting, the scary thing for me about lying is I don't remember ever being taught how to lie. It almost came naturally. I mean, think about your own life and your childhood. How many of you were actually taught how to lie, or how many of you just seemed like it just you knew how to do it? I mean, I'll be honest. I think for me, it's like I felt like it came natural. But this is the one sin that has impacted us tremendously. In fact, it was a lie, Satan deceiving Adam and Eve, that originally led humanity down that path of folly. Off of the path of wisdom, down the path of folly, it started with a lie. Proverbs chapter 21, verse 6 says this: a fortune made by a lying tongue is a fleeting vapor and a deadly snare. I mean, Tyler, you've done a great job getting all. I had so many on there, I didn't know if you'd be able to do that or not. So, hey, if you don't want to flip pages and you don't have the Bible app, Tyler's put them up there for you, too. Listen, I don't want to get caught up in this one. A fortune made by a lying tongue is a fleeting vapor and a deadly snare. I don't think this is all about money and wealth in this proverb. I think what it means is the product of a lie only lasts a moment. Whatever that product is, whether it is a fortune, whether it's wealth, whatever the product, it only lasts for a moment. And I think this is one of those practices that starts small, but it has the tendency to grow and grow and grow until it's out of control. I think that's one of the destructive effects of lying, is that it can start out so small, and before you know it, it's just snowballed into this thing that it devastates anything in its path. And each lie that we tell is momentary. It might bring momentary contentment, it might bring the result that we want momentary, but the need arises for us to cover the first lie with another lie. That's what happens. You know, this is a funny story. I once worked for a habitual liar, honest truth. And one day, I had a coworker come up to me and he said, "Sean, I've finally figured it out. I know how to tell when the boss is lying." And I was like, all right, you know. Is there some facial expression? Is there some like phrase he always uses? I wanted to know. And my coworker said, "Anytime his lips are moving." And he was very close to being right. Listen, here's what you have to understand about liars. Liars will be exposed, and lying will eventually destroy their own life. That's what happens. So we have gossip, we have lying, and then we have this third kind of form of destructive speech, and we've talked about this just briefly, but it's flattery. So if you think back, if you were here with us when we looked at that, the Lady Wisdom, the speech of Lady Wisdom, and the speech of the adulterous woman or Lady Folly, this is the first time we see flattery happening in the book of Proverbs. And essentially what it is flattery is not sincere, but it's giving praise in a way that's trying to manipulate a person receiving the praise. So Proverbs 26, verse 28 says, "A lying tongue hates those it hurts, and a flattering mouth works ruin." Proverbs 29, verse 5 says this, "A man who flatters his neighbor is spreading a net for his steps." And the Hebrew word literally means smooth. When you see that flattery, it's smooth, or a smooth talker. And the thing that separates flattery from actual praise or encouragement is that flattery is not done to benefit the one receiving the compliment. The whole goal of flattery is to tell someone something they want to hear for your own advantage. And so this is why I think it's important when we're giving compliments or giving encouragement to always evaluate our motives. Why are we giving that compliment? Why are we giving somebody praise? Because if it's eventually to help us win that person over or to get them to do something that we want them to do, then that's actually flattery. And flattery is destructive. Flattery is foolish words, not wise words. Now, all three of these types of speech are destructive to the recipients of such speech, but they're also destructive eventually to the one who practices that kind of speech. That's what's so interesting about destructive speech. Destructive speech ultimately hurts the person that is practicing it and the person who is receiving it. All right, so let's change gears. Now let's think about constructive speech, wise words. Proverbs teaches us, there's a theme here too, so we talked about three forms of destructive speech. We're going to talk about three forms of constructive speech, and we're going to start with good words. And I think Proverbs highlights for us three important characteristics of what good words look like. And the first thing that I want to point out is that good words are life-giving. Proverbs chapter 10, verse 11, and then if you skip down to verses 20 and 21, it says this, "The mouth of the righteous is a fountain of life, but the mouth of the wicked conceals violence. The tongue of the righteous is choice silver, but the heart of the wicked is of little value. The lips of the righteous nourish many, but fools die for lack of sense." Wise words are life-giving words. I cannot help but think about life-giving words without thinking about creation. When God spoke the world into existence, and then also reflecting on the words of Jesus. And how every time Jesus spoke, it was an offer of true life. Not only are good words life-giving, but Proverbs tells us that good words are pleasant. Proverbs chapter 16, verse 24 says, "Gracious words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones." I got to experience this in an interesting way. And I don't know why this sticks. I think it sticks out in my head because it's wise words. But it was when I was in seminary. I was just walking down the stairs, and one of my professors, Kathy Sprinkle, she was standing there. She was the counseling professor. We actually had dinner with her before graduation. I was walking down the stairs, and she looked at me. She's like, "Man, that collar looks great on you." And I was kind of dumbfounded, like, you know, to get a compliment like that out of, And she's like, well, I didn't mean anything by it. I just, one of my practices is just to tell people something encouraging. I was like, oh, thank you. You know, but that was pleasant. And so now I remember, like, that color looks good on me. Where's that in the closet? Life-giving, pleasant, and the third thing, third characteristic of good words is that they're comforting. Proverbs chapter 12, verse 25 says, anxiety weighs down the heart, but a kind word cheers it up. So anytime we speak, if we want to use wise words, we should be seeking to bring comfort into the situations that we find ourselves in. All right, that's good words. Now let's talk about timely words. I'm going to be just really transparent with you. Timely words has not always been my strong suit. I have struggled controlling the tongue and speaking timely. But timely words are wise words. And there's two parts to a timely word. The first part is, timely words are spoken at the right time. Proverbs chapter 15, verse 23 says, a person finds joy in giving an apt reply, and how good is a timely word. Timely words occur at the right time. There are times in life when we might have something to say, but the timing is not favorable. And part of using wise words is knowing that even though I have something to say, now's not the right time. Wise speech understands that there's a time to speak and a time to be silent. I was reminded of that this week. So Barbara and I have been going through some stuff this week that came from out of nowhere. And I reached out to a couple different people. One was my mom. I told her the situation, and I knew what she was going to say, but I just kind of wanted to hear it, you know. And I said, this is what I want to say. And she said, well, you know, sometimes the best, and here's the crazy thing, I was studying all this anyway, you know. Be careful. If you ever want to give a sermon, you're always going to be challenged on what you're talking about. But so I knew all this, and she's like, you know, sometimes the best thing to do is not say anything at all. And I was like, okay, yeah, I knew that. And then, you know, a couple days later, happened to be at a restaurant in Connersville, and one of the elders walks in, you know. And so after Barbara and I had lunch, I went and sat down with him, and I said, after some small talk, I said, I got to get your advice on something, kind of gave the situation. And I even said, this is what I want to say. This is what I'm going to say. Laid it all out. He said, well, I don't think there's anything wrong with what you want to say. I think it's okay. And so I'm all like, yeah, okay, good. Yeah, I'm going to get to go say what I want to say. But then he continued to talk, and I was like, so what you're telling me is it's probably best not to say anything at all. Yep. Right time is part of a timely word. The second thing is, when we're talking about timely words, it's not just the right time, but it also takes the right amount of thought. If you look down to verse 28, chapter 15, the heart of the righteous weighs its answers, but the mouth of the wicked gushes evil. You know, another thing my mom always told me as a kid, I'll never forget it, and I've used this line over and over. Actually, I think I used it this week. Think before you speak. And I'll be honest with you, if we stop to think before we say something, what I found is it saves me a lot of embarrassment and a lot of frustration. You know, that part of me not being able to tame my tongue all the time, especially when I was younger, is there were so many times that I spoke out of emotion rather than logic. I was motivated by emotion, and whatever was there, I let it come out. And every single time, I would regret it. I can't tell you one time that I've lashed out and spoken emotionally that I didn't regret it. And on the other hand, I can't tell you one single time I remember regretting something I said after giving careful thought and prayer. Anytime I've given it careful thought, I've prayed about it, and I've waited, I have never regretted what I've said in that moment. So timely words, they're right words, right amount of time, right amount of thought. So we have good words, we have timely words, and this kind of flows into this third type of wise speech we're going to talk about is controlled words. Controlled words. All right, here's something not from the Bible. This is Plato. Plato said, wise men speak because they have something to say. Fools because they have to say something. And I would add this. That wise men speak not just because they have something to say, but because they have thought a lot about what they have to say. Proverbs chapter 13, verse 3 says, those who guard their lips preserve their lives, but those who speak rashly will come to ruin. The Hebrew word literally means to keep watch or to guard. So I want you to understand that the controlled tongue is not one that never speaks, but it's one that speaks carefully and thoughtfully. The controlled tongue is one that fully weighs out the effects of what will be said. And this is hard. You know, it's hard to control the tongue. And I'll be honest with you, I think sometimes what God uses to help us learn to control our tongue is the painful experiences that we have to go through when we don't. So here's two more proverbs for you to consider. From chapter 17, verses 27 and 28. The one who has knowledge uses words with restraint, and whoever has understanding is even-tempered. Even fools are thought wise if they keep silent, and discerning if they hold their tongues. You know, I wonder what or how our lives would change if we had the opportunity to read our own obituary. If we were like Alfred Nobel and somebody really thought we died, how would that shape us? How would the conversations that we've had or the words that we've exchanged with others shape what was written about us? Words are powerful, whether written or spoken. And the challenge that Solomon offers to his son and offers us as well is that there are two paths a person chooses to travel with their speech: the path of the wise and the path of the fool. Wise words lead to life. Foolish words lead to death. Foolish words are destructive. Wise words are constructive. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much for your words that are truly wise and powerful, and shape us and mold us. Father, I want to admit that there have been plenty of times in my life when I have been a foolish person in the way that I've spoken. There are probably times that I've been foolish in what I've said and haven't even realized it. And I ask in those moments that your grace would cover me. Father, I also ask that you would continue to challenge us, each one, as individuals, to use speech that is life-giving, to use words that build people up rather than tear them down. Because the words that you speak over us give us hope and true life. And Father, I know firsthand that there are times in our lives that we are the recipients of words that destroy, that tear us down. And I know that we're not the only ones that experience that. There are a lot of people in this room that have been the recipients of hurtful, harmful words. And I pray that in those moments that you would bring peace, that you would bring restraint, you would bring restoration and hope. But Father, most importantly, in those moments, you would help us feel your presence and hear your voice speaking to us. It's in Jesus' name I pray. Amen. Worship team's going to come forward and sing this last song of reflection. I just want to challenge you to take a moment. The most powerful words, the most wise words that you hear in your life will come directly from the mouth of God, and this is a great opportunity to listen for those words.